Welcome to Bedford County Speaks, the region's only locally produced public affairs program. Every Saturday at this time, we speak to people making a difference in Bedford County. Now, here's our host, Lloyd Roach.
Thank you, Mac DeFazio, and good morning to you, and welcome to Bedford County Speaks, a weekly public affairs program over News Talk 1310 and 98.7 FM, WBFD. This morning's program is brought to you as a public service by the Bedford County Development Association, BCDA, presenting the Bedford County Advantage, a future built on opportunity, collaboration, and the exceptional quality of life that defines our region. I am so excited to invite our guest today, Mark Compton, who is the CEO of the Pennsylvania Turnpike, far and away my favorite road in the whole world. And I will tell you about that later, but it really is. And Mark, I just want to thank you very much. You've been very kind to make a special stop at our historic South Midway rest stop. So thank you very much.
Sure. It was my plea to get you on the roads because we needed the revenue, Lloyd. So thanks for getting on the road.
So anyway, this is great because I want to give you everyone a little history of this. I will tell you my little portion of this, and then you can tell me your little portion. I know about this because in 1939, my father was a consultant to the Turnpike from the insurance industry. And wow. He, at the time, was the president of the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association.
Oh, wow.
And he was involved mostly in the eastern part of the state, later when they built the new parts in the 1950s, but he was involved in the original construction. And, of course, it was a terrible thing to take an 18-wheeler over the hot hills on Route 30. And as a child, I remember hearing about this all the time. So my roots for the Turnpike are rather deep, so it's kind of fun. But if you will give us an idea of what it was like back in 1938 or 9 when you had to transverse Pennsylvania on some of these two-lane roads over these horrible mountain passes.
It required a lot of patience.
Yeah.
And obviously, too, safety was clearly a factor in those days as well, which is really what the thinking was behind why the Turnpike came into existence. So around that time, in the mid-30s, there was a thought to use the current footprint that was laid out for rail to make it into this highway. And the construction started in 1938 and was done in 2 years. If you think about the original 160 miles being done in 2 years, I joke about that with our contractor friends who require a little longer than that to do 4 or 5 miles of reconstruction. But the original footprint was from Irwin to Carlisle. And it opened up to traffic on October 1st, 1940. And what a day that was to see all the planning and folks had lined up for that opening day, which was at midnight, hours and hours before. It was as if Hershey Park was open that day, but the same sort of feeling. And it's been in existence ever since. And it's great to be part of what is an 85-year-old organization. And as I say, we're still in growth mode. And it's exciting to be a part of this.
It just astounds me that you could build 7 tunnels, 180 miles of road.
Correct.
Do it all from scratch in 2 years when today you couldn't even do a bog turtle study for 2 years, right?
The regulations have changed a little bit to slow that process, and probably for good reason in a lot of ways.
Was this not part of a WPA project as well, though?
So as you know, what was transpiring there was the Great Depression.
Right.
So a key part of what it was to get out of that area. So yeah, that's exactly what the thinking was based on economic development. That's really why we exist today. For economic development.
If you ever get a chance, you should go and get some of the books about the Turnpike. They're fascinating. There's 3 of them that I know about. There might be a 4th. 2 of them were produced by the Turnpike, and there's a 3rd one that was done by someone else, and it shows wonderful photographs. But the easiest way to do that is to come to this South Midway, because it has every imaginable photograph you can imagine of the early days of the Turnpike. So thank you very much for doing that. Yeah. This particular rest stop here in Bedford County has some history unto itself, doesn't it?
It does. And back whenever the reimagining of the service plazas, the thinking was back in 2007, whenever this was done, was to make sure that this maintained its initial footprint and also maintained its structure. So this is the only one of the system that has maintained that, and it's because at the time of opening, these things were a destination.
Why was it called Midway?
because it was midway between the original footprint.
I see.
It was right halfway right in the middle between the Irwin.
So Irwin, I guess, Carlisle. And Carlisle, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Our guest is Mark Compton, the CEO of the Pennsylvania Turnpike, and we're here speaking with him in the historic South Midway. And we picked this because it's not only in Bedford County, but at the tremendous convenience of myself to come here without having to go all the way to Harrisburg to see you. So I appreciate your...
And I'll buy you a piece of pizza when we're done.
And really you have good. A piece of pizza. There you go. There you go. I would like to also cover with you a little bit about yourself. You're from Mannheim, correct?
We live in Mannheim now. Yeah, we do. We've been here for a good part of 20 years. It's been a great place to raise a family. But originally, I graduated out from Altoona High School.
So oh, really?
I'm a bit of a local boy
here
as it relates to coming back to Bedford. So I love coming back to this area.
So where did you go to school after Altoona?
Penn State. We are.
Of
we
course
are,
you did. Of course you did. Right. I want to talk to you about the evil Act 44.
Okay.
That's what I call it. You don't need to call it that, but I want to talk to you about the evil Act 44. I've done pieces on the air about this over the last 3 or 4 years easily about why the funding is the way it is and why people are complaining that you're all getting $500,000 raises because of the high tolls of the turnpike. But I want you to tell me the real reason.
So back whenever, well before my time, but the governor at the time was Ed Rendell. And privatization of toll roads was becoming into vogue. It happened in Indiana and some other places. And he saw the opportunity to do that, which would be to take the cash out of the system. So he had presented that opportunity, and the person that was in the position at my time, along with the commissioners, came up with a process that would have monetized the system but kept it in-house, meaning it would not have privatized it. And the key part of that was to toll Interstate 80. And as you know, the act came into existence with the opportunity or the hope to get federal approval to toll Interstate 80. As you know, that did not come into existence.
So had that occurred, this wouldn't have been this difficulty because you've gotten the tolls off the Northern Highway.
That would have been a part of it, but the fallback position was for the Turnpike to bond $450 million to give to PennDOT for highway and transit. Had Interstate 80 been tolled, that number was much higher. So there still would have been a piece of the main line that currently would have been bonded back for that process. But with it being the fallback position solely on the main line, yes, that's really why the total amount that was bonded to PennDOT, which is over now, we have sunsetted it all but $50 million a year, which is still big money, but it's not $450 million, was about $8 billion that was given back to PennDOT for highway and transit funding.
So this is why we're having all of the angst in Philadelphia with SEPTA and the angst in Pittsburgh with PRT, because they're now looking for new funding sources, correct?
That's true. Yeah. There's no free lunches, they say.
Because, I don't know, it always bothered me that I have to pay a toll to operate a SEPTA train in Philadelphia.
Well, and candidly, too, transit is one of our biggest competitors, if you think about it from that perspective. Obviously, we're multimodal. We don't try not to view it that way, but it was interesting to fund one of your biggest competitors.
My guest is Mark Compton, the CEO of the Pennsylvania Turnpike. We're here in the South Plaza Midway to speak with him about some of the things that are going on with the Turnpike. I just want to stay with Act 44 for just a minute. So now that the fee, if you will, has reduced to $50 million, you're not going to have to concern yourself with this additional debt you've incurred, correct? I mean, you're going to have to pay this off eventually, but this debt has been pretty onerous, I would think.
Correct. And a big part of it is it's all we call 30-year money. So it's all been 30-year financing. So the first tranche of this doesn't roll off until 2038.
Right.
And the biggest thing, too, that not a lot of folks know is once they leveraged it, it's a little bit like buying a house that your salary doesn't pay for yet. Because back in the early days...
Why? I'm shocked. People do this?
So back in the early days of Act 44, the turnpike revenues weren't sustainable enough to pay off a traditional bond. So they front-loaded a lot of that funding to basically be interest only and now paying off the principal. So for us, the peak really hits in 2038 to where we come back down the other side of the mountain. This year we will have, of our revenues, over $1 billion will go to debt financing, $1 billion a year.
It sounds like some of the horrible line of credits I've had to get into with business purchases and so forth. I mean, you just pay and pay. Well, good luck with this, and I hope it does alleviate itself eventually.
Good news is traffic and revenue continue to climb.
Yeah.
We continue to work hard to meet the needs of our customers. We are a road of choice. As you know, you don't have to take the turnpike, but we work hard to meet the needs of our customers, and that's a key part of what we try to do every single day.
What is the big thing happening, say, in the next 12 months? I see these gantries hanging over the road. This is part of the open tolling. Is that what that is?
Yeah, so we're really excited to the transition that's occurring with open road tolling. So if you're on the system from the Reading out to the New Jersey line up the Northeast Extension, we're already operating in that mode there. Mm-hmm. So it's a segment-based tolling system that collects the toll as you're moving through the gantry, no longer in the interchanges. Mm-hmm. And it really is allowing us to reimagine how the turnpike is. If you think about where we were at back in opening traffic in 1940 for economic development, this really opens us up new opportunity for economic development too, because the ability to do this allows us to have conversations with areas and neighborhoods who desire interchanges into their neighborhoods and into their communities. And we're starting to have those discussions now, and we're really excited about that.
I think one of the things I heard about from Turnpike officials some years ago is the original idea is it was going to be an end-to-end highway. It really wasn't a commuter road. They didn't have too many exits because the value was to get you from point A to point B. Has that changed? Has Turnpike's role kind of changed a little bit with that too?
It has, and a key part of that is because the expense of an interchange whenever you are tolling at the interchange, it really makes it unaffordable to add interchanges.
Yeah.
So if you think about it, a typical interchange here has what we call a trumpet design, which means you have to flow all the traffic into a tolling apparatus to get out to the off the system. Now we can do more of a diamond type interchange, which you see here on 99. So it's a much less intensive opportunity to get these interchanges. So it allows us to have discussions to communities who'd like to see those.
And when I last spoke to you, when we met at the opening of that trailhead, you said something interesting I didn't know. There was a law at one point where you weren't allowed to connect a toll highway to an interstate. Do I have that right?
Correct.
So that's changed. So that's made also a lot better for you.
It has, which has provided us connections down in the Philadelphia area for 95.
Right.
And as we look forward to seeing what's going to transpire here in Breezewood area, because that is the one connection that we are strongly in design for now, pushing hard, and look forward to making that connection much different than it is today.
We are speaking with Mark Compton, who is a good friend of our sponsor, BCDA, the Bedford County Development Association, and their representing sponsor, where you get the Bedford County Advantage in the future, build an opportunity, collaboration, and exceptional quality of life. That's the BCDA. And when we return, we're going to talk a little bit about that Breezewood interchange. No, it's not scary. It's going to be a great thing when Bedford County Speaks continues.
This is Anthony Molinari of the Huntington-Bedford-Fulton Area Agency on Aging, and you're listening to Bedford County Speaks on News Talk FM 98.7 and 1310 AM WBFD.
Today's Bedford County Speaks is presented as a public service by the Bedford County Development Association. BCDA President Jen Marsh, along with her professional staff, are building new business, residential, and outdoor recreation opportunities in Bedford County. BCDA builds business parks and fully operational building sites, such as the newly opened Rural Electric Cooperative Operations Center in Business Park 1, or site-ready locations in Business Park 2. In addition to excellent locations for business and industry, BCDA builds relationships that have added millions of dollars and thousands of jobs to Bedford County. BCDA represents a future built on opportunity, collaboration, and the exceptional quality of life that defines our region. To learn more, visit bcda.org.
Now let's return to Lloyd and his guest on Bedford County Speaks.
We have returned at the South Midway Plaza with Mark Compton of the Turnpike, and as I promised, we're going to talk to you a bit about Breezewood. Breezewood is really very three-dimensional. It is not only we're going to move an interchange, but we're going to integrate ourselves into the community, which kind of folds back into what our BCDA sponsor is doing and bringing all of this together in Bedford County. Let me ask you a real quick question. Does BCDA and its organization have any positive impact on the Turnpike? Is this helpful to you at all?
They've been a tremendous partner and a key partner in allowing us to be able to do what we do. And we really came to know them and get to know them really well when we did the Sidling Hill Trailhead.
Yeah.
And that really was an opportunity for us to really start to imagine then what we would do in Breezewood because of the opportunities there with Sidling Hill. So Sidling Hill, if you look back to our strategic plan, was an opportunity for us to what we call be a better neighbor, allowing parking on the one side of inside the service plaza and on the outside for the community. And we just talked about open road tolling. There will be a day to where that whole fence will be pulled because you'll be able to access the system and then turn around at the service plaza. So there's new opportunity there too. But your folks from Bedford County are so great. And we really appreciated the partnership. And they now are starting to really imagine what Breezewood can be like as we start the design process. So I can't say enough great things about the people you have, and you better keep them because they are a great set of.
I find it fascinating because Breezewood for years and years was called the city of motels and all that, but it really has taken on another dimension. When you get this thing hooked together, they're going to have a tremendous advantage of intersecting Route 70, which comes up from Washington and Baltimore. And now you're going to have all that traffic and all that knowledge coming in. Conceptually, I see it as something far greater than that.
And it's going to really enable folks who want to get into Breezewood to get into Breezewood without the folks who don't want to get into based on their cross traffic and the commercial vehicles.
Right.
So that's a key part of this. Access will still continue to be provided to Breezewood. So I think there was a thought there that would not be the case. That was the one overarching theme that we want to make sure everyone understands is you will still be able to access Breezewood as you do today, but you won't have to continue the connection between the Turnpike and 70. And think about the way in which the Turnpike is structured. All that roadway that requires us to get feed into Breezewood now, that'll all be open for economic development.
Right. So it's already there.
It's already there.
And I think it's kind of interesting you've reused that 90-year-old road three times. Now you have this new thing. You're going to reuse it again. It will be a feeder road into Breezewood. And I would imagine that intersection, that new intersection, will blossom into other new businesses around there. Would that be so?
Yeah. I think what you are really going to see, and in a large part with our partner here from Bedford County, is they're really reimagining what that area can look. And what was really exciting is to see what is flourishing here in this community based on your door tourism activity, the trails, and also to the businesses that are coming up, Kate's Bars, all those things that are coming up based on that sort of activity. And these things take a lot of plan. And we give you that opportunity through our design process to really think about what you want to have there. But I know your folks are brainstorming and are going to bring great things to Breezewood.
I was recently appointed to the Bedford Fulton Authority, Recreational Authority. This has really opened my eyes about this intersection as well, because Fulton County doesn't have a lot of opportunity for this kind of thing right now. Yeah. But boy, when this is done, this is going to have a huge impact on Fulton County as well, it would seem to me.
It really will.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really will. And I think the opportunity to blossom here is just getting started.
I'm a big promoter on naming rights, and I want them to rename the tunnels. So I was imagining, the tunnels, I don't know, not McDonald's, but something on the tunnel.
This tunnel was brought to you by.
Right, brought to you by McDonald's, right? So we'll have to work on that.
Keep thinking.
I will. Our guest is Mark Compton, who is the CEO of the Turnpike, and he's originally from Altoona. Well, that makes you very very friendly, right? Here I thought you were from Lancaster County, so what do I know? Well, in fact, that's what brought us here to Bedford County. We were up looking at the Horseshoe Curve, and that's how I discovered Bedford. We were up here hanging around the Horseshoe Curve.
Well, it's a great community. As we sit here in the service plaza, just outside our door here was a project called Art Sparks. Art Sparks was a partnership that we had with at Chestnut Ridge High School. And what a great group of teachers, educators, and students that came to put this project together. And if you look across here at the service plaza that is known as North Midway, Everett High School did that project and really got us kind of ingrained in the community here to see what type of leadership and great folks you have in this community. And just a shout out to them. Come back and see your art and know that we knew that this community is in good hands because of the school districts you have here locally.
On BCDA's angle here, I was noted that Jen Marsh was telling me how they're now integrating these schools. They have something called What's Up with Manufacturing, and it's a very interesting program. They are introducing the young people to manufacturing, because a lot of people think manufacturing, that's a steel mill where people are throwing around big steel plates and all have helmets on. I went in one of these factories, And now, as some guy in front of a keyboard, where every the keyboard and all these machines are doing it, you know, and it's fascinating how it's changed.
The world's changing, that's for sure.
So I think that when better transportation helps us become more of an attractor for people coming to work here, not to mention the fact that people like BCA want to have, they want people that build here and have new things. Let me ask you about the rest of the main line. Mm-hmm. Are there other places along the main line where this is occurring as well, not just Bedford County?
So if you take a look here locally, so what we have here, as you look out at the roadway, it's an 85-year-old footprint. So a key part of what we need to do is reinvest back in that asset. And that's what we're doing. So basically, we take it by mile marker, from mile marker 149 to 160, that is all in current design. So what's going to transpire over the course of the next few years is we'll get it through design, we'll get through the permit approval, and then we'll open it up to construction. And what you'll see in front of you here is going from four lanes to six lanes, which all our reconstruction does.
We have room between here and North Plaza for six lanes?
we do.
Be a little tight?
Yeah, it will be a little tight. The parking lot for sure, but yeah, we certainly have room to do.
Open road tolling. Mm-hmm. This is fascinating. This is a new technology. You have little cameras on top of these gantries to take pictures of your license plate or detect your Easy Pass. I asked Crispin this question, but he didn't want to answer me, so I'm going to get you to answer it. I said,
Crispin gets all the hard ones.
Well,
I'm not sure what
if somebody on the highway chooses to cover up their license plate? Are the cameras so good you can look in and see their face? What happens?
So as it relates to how we do collections, so just to by the numbers or the percentages, we collect 93% of all revenue that goes on the system. Key part of that is what we call the tag or the Easy Pass penetration, mm-hmm. which for us now is about 85 to 86% on any given day. So what we're doing then is on the toll by plate, which is where the other percentages come through. Of the 93%, the 7% left, 4% of folks in state and out of state are getting good invoices but choosing not to pay. So of the 7%, that is the biggest component of what we deal with, which are folks who are getting good invoices and choosing not to pay. The other 3% is made up in folks who are obstructions of the license plate, which is illegal. If the state police sees you, Troop T, they'll pull you over. And another part of that, too, is plates that are not connected back to the DMV, which is bad plates, and then things like that. But that makes up 3%. The other is really the 4%. So the biggest area to where we need to, and we will continue to fine-tune the business rules to try to continue to pick up that 3%. We're not stopping with that. But of the 4%, we work very close with PennDOT. So two of that 4% is in-state. By round numbers, the other 2% is out-of-state. On the in-state, we do have the legislation, and we work with PennDOT, that if you have a accounts receivable above $250, we will pull your vehicle registration. We'll suspend your registration.
Ah, so there is a penalty.
There is a penalty, which at that point you cannot.
You hear that? Don't do it, because you do that, they're going to take your...
Crime doesn't pay.
And, you know, I guess like any enterprise, there's always a 1 or 2 or 3% of the criminal element. I don't care what you do. If you're in the turnpike business or the radio business or whatever, there's always going to be a little edge of that.
Yeah.
And I guess it's cost of doing business, supposedly.
It is. And we continue to fine-tune, continue to work with other states on what we call reciprocity agreements that will enable us to, obviously the highest flyers are the states that are connected. It's New Jersey, it's Ohio, it's Maryland. So we're working on reciprocity agreements there so that the out-of-state folks will have to pay as well.
Do the Easy Passes work in other states?
It does. Yeah, it does. It's connected all the way out to the Midwest now, all the way down to Florida.
Yeah.
And all the Easy Pass states do work together, which does make collection easier in those states.
Because it's got to be easier on the driver. I mean, I think you can go from here to the George Washington Bridge in New York on your Easy Pass.
Correct. Sure. All the New York agencies are participating in that. And all the way down through 95 now, down to Florida, you can use your Easy Pass too.
One of the interesting things at Turnpike to me is that when I was in business, I would have to drive a lot, which I did. And I remember leaving my home in Westchester, where I lived at the time, and getting on Route 202 and going up and getting on the downtown interchange and realizing the next traffic light I would see would be in downtown Chicago. And that is a very, I don't know, it's just kind of a weird but interesting thing. This is what these highways have done, you know. And over that, I went over the Pennsylvania Turnpike, the Ohio Turnpike, the Indiana Turnpike, which, of course, are parts of Route 80, 90 and all that. But it's very interesting that this is all connected. It's made it very, very easy for some to travel. Our guest is Mark Compton, of the CEO of the Turnpike, and we're brought to you today, as always, by BCDA, the Bedford County Development Association. My name is Lloyd Roach, and you're listening to Bedford County Speaks. We have just a few more minutes, and I want to just cover a couple other things with you. This whole notion, the interchanges becoming economic opportunities, is this new? Has it always been like this? Or is it you've just developed it more?
Well,
what do you think?
What I would tell you is where the existing interchanges were are always in place since 1940, and then with the expansion, as economic development happened around them. Now that the opportunity is to really reimagine and really have conversations with communities who desire interchanges onto the system. Right. And a key part of that is where it makes sense for us from a traffic perspective, where we would gain new traffic. Another part, too, is where they would really get and want the access into those communities, and that really does spur economic development whenever those two have their opportunity to meet.
Your headquarters is in High Spire.
Correct.
Which, of course, is Middletown, technically, which is kind of sort of Harrisburg, so it's all, you know, same. But what's in there? Your executive offices, I know you have a control center. I've had a tour of that. Very impressive. But what do you do in there? Do you run the whole turnpike out of that building?
So the Traffic Operations Center really is our eyes and ears.
Yeah.
And a key part of that is connectivity back to the system, which then talks to our folks who are out on the system. So no one expects to stop on an interstate highway. However, through crashes, it does have to happen from time to time. Key part of what the Operations Center does is to make sure they get resources out to the incident as quickly as possible. So what we say is we want to make sure we have quick clearance, an opportunity to get the road back open, because what we find is that whenever there is stoppage, that's where the next accident is often worse than what the first was. So a key part of what they do is make sure that the continuity of the system is maintained, and when it's not, they get resources out to the site to get it open quickly. And I got to tell you, with new technologies that they have, what they will tell you is if you get a phone call or an issue, they feel like they failed, because then the system did not indicate that something was wrong before the call came in. So they're watching the system, and in 90% of the time, that call doesn't have to come in. When it does, they've already been made aware, have resources out to the site, have eyes and ears out to the site to get apparatus out to get folks safely where they need to
be. One of the reasons I really like this road is that when you get on an interstate highway and you're in another state and you don't know where you're going half the time, it's very comforting to know that if something happens to you on the Pennsylvania Turnpike system, someone's going to know about it, toot sweet.
Yeah.
And you're going to be served by a vehicle, which has, I guess, one of your sponsors on it, whoever they are this day, and they're going to come and they can put air in your tires. And this is really quite extraordinary. You can't get that anywhere else.
Yeah.
I mean, you certainly can't get that on Route 30. Yeah. So, I mean, that's a nice feature that Turnpike has always had since it started.
Yeah, and that's the metrics that goes right to the top. So our five commissioners really, really drive us strategically to make sure that we're doing the things we need to be doing to get to the next level. As we say, leave footprints in the industry. And that's a key part of what we do is around safety. So if you think about the legislation that enabled us to get cameras in the work zone, that wouldn't happen without our five commissioners pushing that to push the General Assembly to get that. And it has been a tool in the toolbox that is important. So if you're in a work zone, no, there's a chance you're getting your picture taken, because if you're speeding, you know, there will be a fine coming your way. So it's tools like that, from all things related to green lights that you're now seeing on trucks, is our commissioners drive us to make sure that we maintain the classification of being one of the safest roads in the nation.
I miss anything?
What, anything else?
Ask Crispy. Ask him. He'll tell us if we missed anything. He's over there saying it's a good job. He's just saying that because you're here. I understand that.
The last thing I would tell you is it relates to Lloyd for where we're at with sustainability. We have a partnership with the folks who run this center here named Apple Green. And Apple Green Electric is putting EV chargers in each of our 17 service
places.
So within the course of the next 6 months, we should have chargers in all 17 plazas that are agnostic chargers that will charge any vehicle. And know that I understand the growth of electric vehicles is slowing, but it's still true that next year there will be more electric vehicles than there were this year. We want to make sure our customers know that if they choose to drive an electric vehicle, they'll have an opportunity to charge it at one of our.
From your research, are you seeing possibilities of large trucks using this system on your road?
Being electric?
Yeah.
You're talking about, so all of the conversations we're having with our best customers, which are their commercial, is that in order for them to charge a tractor trailer, it's going to have to be in the road itself. because the batteries, the size of the battery, the weight of the battery that they would require to have in that tractor trailer, it does not enable them to charge it.
Physics don't overcome the weight.
Correct.
Right. Yeah. Mark Compton, you've been wonderful. Thank you very much for coming here to the South Midway Plaza and this wonderful dining room. By the way, folks, this is the only place you can have lunch where you have a fireplace. I think it's tremendous. The only other place I've ever seen this is the Harrisburg train station, where they have the fireplaces at both ends.
Well, I got to tell you, though, my favorite dining, besides our wonderful service plaza, my favorite spot to eat is always the JonBenét Tavern.
Oh, the JonBenét. Yeah,
we come and we plan our trips about leaving Pittsburgh or coming in through here to get to Pittsburgh or back to the office around lunchtime, so we can always stop at the JonBenét place.
Or as the locals jokingly call it, Jean Bonnet. Right?
Yeah.
Thank you again. Really great to talk to you. And we want to thank our guest, Mark Compton, for coming here to Bedford County Speaks. And it's just great. Thank you very much again. And you've been very kind to do that.
Thank you.
And
boy,
a big thanks to Marissa to make sure I was here. We want to thank our guest, Mark Compton, from the Pennsylvania Turnpike for this morning's program, which was brought to you as a public service by the Bedford County Development Association, BCDA, presenting the Bedford County Advantage. A future built on opportunity, collaboration, and the exceptional quality of life that defines our region. To learn more, visit bcda.org. This is Lloyd Roach. See you next Saturday. Until then, have a great week.
You have been listening to Bedford County Speaks over 98.7 FM and 1310 AM WBFD. The show is heard right here every Saturday at 8:30 AM. If you'd like to hear the program again, visit bedfordcountyspeaks.com. Join us next time for Bedford County Speaks.